Welcome to Memphis Metropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm your host, Emily Trenum. Memphis Metropolis is all about our city as an urban place, including its neighborhoods, buildings, pathways, and parks, as well as the people who shape it. Join us each week as community leaders and commentators talk with me about our shared built environment. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Memphis Metropolis and WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm the host, Emily Trenum. And this week, we have a special guest, who is Nick Euler, who's the former Bikeway and Pedestrian Program Manager for the City of Memphis. And Nick, you have the great privilege of being the only person who's been on the program three times.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. Thanks, Emily, for inviting me back.
Well, sadly, it's your last visit ever to my recording studio / laundry room because you recently left the city to accept a new position in Colorado. And congratulations on that. But along with a lot of people, I'm sad you're leaving, but I thought it'd be a great opportunity to bring you back on one last time and just reflect on your time in Memphis and share some challenges and successes and all that kind of stuff. So thanks for coming back on Memphis Metropolis.
Yeah, thanks. It really is my pleasure. I've enjoyed all of our previous conversations, and I'm happy to take the opportunity to reflect on the last several years.
No burning bridges, I'm sure, but no, but when you work in government, you have to be very your candor is limited. So I'm sure you'll be candid with your thoughts. And so Nick, I have to tell you the city for a long time, Memphis was behind the curve in appointing a bike and pedestrian coordinator. Most other cities had them, and we didn't for a long time for a variety of reasons. And finally, the resources were secured to appoint someone. And the person who was in that position was someone named Kyle Wagenschutz, who I know people may remember, who also left and moved to Colorado, which I guess is where bike and pedestrian managers go after they leave Memphis. Yep. I mean, along with a lot of other people who really love Colorado. But Kyle was just a perfect first person in that position. I mean, he was very savvy and knowledgeable, had great rapport with community members, but also elected officials. And, when he left, I got to say, I think me and a lot of other people thought, those are some big shoes to fill. But you have filled them and then some. I really, as a compliment to you, I really thought, we can't do – Kyle was so great, but you've also been great and carried on that work, and then led in a lot of other areas as well. So really sincerely sorry that you're leaving.
Well, thank you, Emily. I really appreciate that. I was working here in a different position while Kyle was here. I'm well aware of his work and the amount that he accomplished. So hearing you say that really is touching for me.
You've been here a lot longer. You've been in that role or various roles for longer. So have been able to have, arguably an even bigger impact. So, but let's talk about, you've been in your current, your current role, your most recent role was in the engineering department. And then before that, you were involved in bike and pedestrian work as part of the Metropolitan Planning Organization, which for people that don't know is really just the regional transportation planning arm of government. So, I've got a couple of questions for you. I want to talk a little bit about things you see as successes and challenges, things you're concerned about as you're leaving the city, but. What's changed? Just go back to when you first started. I have ideas about this as well, but what's changed in terms of you know, infrastructure planning, attitudes, or just there's probably been a lot of changes.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. You know, we've made a lot of ground, covered a lot of ground. I think there's still a lot left to go, to be honest. But when you look at where we are today, where the city of Memphis is today compared to where it was 10, 12 years ago, you know, before Kyle, my predecessor, as you said, was hired, it's a significant difference. You know, in 2010, Memphis was the 18th largest city in the country by population. And we had less than a mile of bike lane in total for the whole city, you know, one of the largest cities in the country. And we didn't even have a full mile of bike lane.
And those were out in Memphis, East Memphis, in a very wealthy area. They didn't go anywhere.
That's right. Yeah. It was Shady Grove Road in East Memphis. It was put there mainly to placate more of a recreational kind of cyclist group. And that's kind of like a first try for doing a bike lane. And we didn't even have, at the start of 2010, we didn't even have any off-street, you know, greenway. The Shelby Farms Green Line, it was under construction by then, but it wasn't open yet. A lot of people thought that it was going to be this absolute failure, waste of public money. You know, who in Memphis is going to want to walk and bike on this thing?
It was
this novel concept. Yeah. And, you know, move forward 12 years or 13 or so years later to today, we have over 300 miles of on and off street bikeways in the city, including some protected bike lanes, the Shelby Farms Green Line, as well as other, you know, similar off street paths are a phenomenal success to the extent that they're being expanded. Shelby Farms Green Line has been expanded maybe a couple of times already, is in the process of being expanded even further. The Wolf River Greenway is being developed. So in many ways, certainly from a recreational standpoint and an exercise, you know, physical health standpoint, I think the idea of creating more walkable, bikeable Memphis in that sense has been a success. And people have definitely bought into it. I still think we have improvements to go, though, in terms of thinking about walkability, bikeability as mobility, as ways to get around the city. Yeah, I'm sure you have some questions about that. But yeah, in a general sense, you know, I think that's kind of the change we've seen in the last decade.
What about, you know, public attitudes? I mean, I'm thinking back, you know, I was involved in some of that early work and, you know, just putting the bike lanes in on Madison Avenue, you know, knock down, drag out fights. And then there was a lot of, you know, in those early days, there was a lot of, you know, strong advocates for, and then, but quite strong advocates against. I'm thinking about bike lanes specifically, not about pedestrian infrastructure, which we really weren't even talking about much at the time, to be honest. Is that still the tenor of the discussion, or do you feel like, you know, I still hear people say that, you know, why are we investing in bike lanes when people are hungry and that kind of thing? But it seems like it's just more taken as accepted that, for the most part, that those mm-hmm. kind of investments yeah. are important and that they're going to be made.
Yeah, I would generally agree with that. I think it has gotten easier to put down a bike lane in the city of Memphis than it was, you know, 10 years ago. And maybe kind of to what you were saying, maybe some of that is just people accepting it. Well, this is, you know, what the city does now. So yeah, it is. But I also think in many cases, people have just come to see the benefit or have come to see that, you know, the world doesn't end when you put a bike lane on this street necessarily. Or even better, they've come to see the, like I said, the benefit that, oh, actually this by doing this reconfiguration of the street, you know, going from a four-lane roadway with no bike lanes to a three-lane with a center turn lane, plus bike lanes, plus on-street parking. That actually has, you know, it can calm traffic. It makes it easier for me to get out of my driveway. It supports adjacent businesses by creating that on-street parking that maybe wasn't there before, that sort of thing. But you're right. I wasn't, you know, the bike lane battle on Madison Avenue. That was before my time with the city, but I was an observer of that. And that was nearly a year long public process that was covered in, you know, all the local media. There were public meetings about it. There was a camp that was, you know, for the bike lanes on Madison. There was a camp against it. And it was really the first time that the city was, one of the first times we were proposing bike lanes at all, but specifically the first time the city was proposing to do what we call a road diet, you know, reconfigure that roadway, like I just described, from a four lane configuration to a three lane configuration. So it was unheard of in the city to be reducing the number of lanes on a street like that. And people thought we were crazy to propose something like that. I don't want to say that, you know, every bike lane, every project that I proposed in my time with the city, that it was easy and I got it done. But certainly, you know, didn't quite have that level of conflict occurring or like that kind of battle, to the extent that happened, that, you know, we saw with Madison. Well, I think, you know, it's gotten a little easier over
time.
Well,
and I think that people have seen, like you said, the world didn't end. I mean, occasionally, yes, you have to wait. If you're traveling down Madison at rush hour, occasionally you have to wait an additional light to turn. I mean, but the world didn't end, and it worked. I mean, it slowed traffic down. It put in a lot of extra parking for businesses that didn't have it or didn't have enough. And and it's, of course, that corridor has seen significant revitalization. And it's gotten a lot more pleasant to walk on because the traffic isn't going as fast. And there's fewer. I know you've heard me talk on the show. I mean, I live a block from Madison and McLean, and there used to be accidents there all the time. You never hear that now, the screeching and the collision noise. I mean, you'd hear it at least once a week. You don't hear that anymore. You know, because Madison and McLean, there's fewer lanes and people aren't going as fast. So,
yeah. And you're right. I believe it led to the resurgence of Madison Avenue just as a corridor, destination corridor. You know, people who may be newer to Memphis or maybe that you've just forgotten that. So this time period, we're talking about 2011, when this public discussion about doing this lane reconfiguration and putting the bike lanes in. This was prior to Overton Square coming back. You know, Overton Square, for the most part, was still an empty shell of itself from its heyday. A lot of businesses were boarded up along Madison and a lot of just vacant properties. And then the city did this reconfiguration. And I think because of the benefits of slowing down traffic, making it a friendlier, safer street, that helped lead to the resurgence. And it's not just me, my opinion, saying that. There was actually a study conducted by researchers at Portland State University a few years ago that looked at, I think it was 8 cities in the country to determine the economic impact of these kinds of street improvement projects, you know, making the street better for walking and biking. And one of the case studies they looked at was Madison Avenue.
Really? I missed that. That's very interesting. I'd love to see it.
You can find it online. I think go to peopleforbikes.org. Maybe People for Bikes is the organization, I think, where the results of the study are housed. But yeah, they looked at, you know, sales tax data, and some other, you know, quantifiable metrics, and determined that, yes, there was a positive economic impact directly resulting from this change.
So what about support from public officials. Of course, that was very important in those early, you know, political leadership and support from elected officials was very important in really carrying those first success stories over the finish line. But a lot of elected officials just weren't generally supportive. I don't think they really understood the importance of it. And do you feel like that's changed along with sort of the public and becoming just more accepting of the fact that this is part of the transportation infrastructure that we're building out?
Yes, I do think it's changed somewhat. And like, I mean, exactly like you're saying, though, it's kind of just mirroring what we've seen just at large in Memphis. Again, you know, 10 years ago or so, I remember there being some city council members at the time. I don't believe any of the ones I had in mind are still on the council. They've left. But, you know, at the time, I remember them being vocally against bike lanes, you know, wanting to try and challenge, you know, city engineering's leadership at the time with, you know, proposing bike lanes. And for the most part, most of my, you know, tenure with the city, I really didn't see that anymore. I think most of our elected leaders were, you know, fairly accepting to what we were proposing. Maybe some exceptions now and then, but for the most part, you know, kind of open to it. I will say, though, that while maybe the general just kind of openness to the idea has improved, I still wouldn't say we have any elected official who is really, you know, a champion for these kinds of changes or a champion for, you know, just transportation mobility at large in the city.
Well, maybe we need to elect somebody like that. Now that you mentioned it, I can't think of anybody that's a real that's a vocal champion for active transportation. That's an excellent point.
Mayor election coming up. I'd be curious to see what the thoughts of the candidates are on these issues.
Yeah, I've got some thoughts about how some of them would fall, but a lot of them. And to be honest with you, I think that you're going to have to really drill down and ask them. I don't think those are going to be. I worked on one of the policy platforms for one of the candidates, and it's. I mean, yeah, that's a little more granular than you're able to. I think to the extent that people are looking at transportation as issues to elevate, I think you're hearing about transit.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think maybe transit could be sort of the gateway to a larger conversation about mobility and transportation safety.
Absolutely. So so just thinking about the, you know, projects you've worked on, or it could be policy changes you've advanced, if there have been ones, tell me a few things that you're, you know, particularly proud of. I mean, not just getting more bike lanes on the road, of course, is very, very important, but things that are a little, just a few things that, because I have things in my career I think about, you know, I'm personally very proud that I was part of that. And so talk to me a little bit about a couple things that you are, that you're personally proud to have played an important role in.
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's hard for me to pick specific things, because honestly, this really has been in many ways a dream job for me. My inspiration, the reason I became a city planner, that I went to get a, you know, master's degree in city planning, was Memphis. It's my hometown. I wanted to eventually, you know, apply my skills here in Memphis to help make it a better city. And eventually became focused on transportation, active transportation. And so landing this job was, it made me pretty happy. I was happy to be doing it for the 6.5 years that I got to do it. I'm proud of a lot. You know, really, maybe surprising to some people, I would say some of the things I'm most proud of in terms of projects, like actual, you know, tangible projects you can go out and see on the ground, are kind of just the small things. Helping neighborhoods that were concerned about speeding traffic, helping them get some kind of traffic calming measure on their street, getting a basic crosswalk put down. I remember in my first year on the job, I'm having a woman who lived in along Peabody Avenue or near Peabody, concerned about her child walking to Idlewild Elementary School and thinking that a better crosswalk was needed across Peabody Avenue. And I helped get that done and got the crosswalk put down. And I just remember just how thankful she was for something that seems so simple. But just knowing that those kind of small things in neighborhoods across the city and working with people across the state to get those kinds of small things done. On a larger scale, again, thinking of specific projects, the HAMP line is definitely one that I'm proud of. I always kind of thought of myself as just a steward for that project. I didn't start it. It was an idea born from business owners and residents along Broad Avenue, long before Broad Avenue is what we know now know it as. It was really a grassroots idea to transform the street to connect Binghamton with the Shelby Farms Green Line and with Overton Park. And eventually the city bought into it. The city successfully applied for a federal grant to help build it. And because it was receiving that federal grant, I like to say I have a love-hate relationship with federal grants. It's great to have the money to help build these projects, but it comes with a lot of bureaucracy and hoops to jump through and can result in a project taking years to get to construction.
Yes, yes, it can.
So the HAMP
line, and then when the state gets involved,
right? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So as you know, it took I think it was over 10 years for the HAMP line to finally get built, or at least what's there now along Tillman and parts of Broad Avenue. I could argue it's not quite done. There's still some gaps to fill in with permanent construction, but so I'm proud that I was able to get that project across the finish line. Just knowing the background that was involved. Not many people know this, but it almost didn't happen. Like, again, because of the bureaucracy involved with that grant, we reached a point where there was a particular deadline to complete a step in the process. And it literally got down to, I think it was the day of the deadline, when working with the state, we were able to get this step completed, and that allowed it to go to construction. And had we not completed that step by that deadline, there's a good chance the project would have died. So I'm proud of that. And just in a general sense too, of anytime I see somebody, using a bike lane, seeing somebody, using some new sidewalk that's in, or hear, heard from people who, just reach out every now and then, say, hey, I use this bike lane to get to work now. It's great. Or like that woman from Peabody Avenue who just wanted to let me know that it was needed and now it helps her child get there safer. Those kinds of things have been very fulfilling for me, and knowing that helped me know that the work I've done has really made an impact.
Well, those kind of, you really can improve neighborhoods and people's experiences in them. A couple projects that happened in your tenure that I'm the classic person that doesn't like to go west of Highland, although I do, so that's my lens. But two projects that I really love are the crosswalk at the library, which was just badly, badly needed. And I don't think necessarily used a lot, but the people who use it need it. And, that people would get dropped off at the bus and across the street right. from the library. How can we have that? But there's no traffic light there. I mean, it's sort of, that was a huge step forward, I think. And also it's very visible. So I think people see it and think like, you know, we can do this. And then the other one that's very close to my house that is just been so successful on a lot of different levels from my perspective is at McLean and Overton Park Avenue, where the some traffic calming and of course that was huge because that's also a street where lots and lots of people walk across, and you know, kids going to Snowden School. And so that was needed, but then I was just, of course, I drive up there all the time, and I didn't occur to me till recently is that even though it slows the traffic down, of course, I'm not telling you something you don't already know since you're the person who probably dreamed it up, but not only does it slow the traffic down, it at some level speeds it up because it's just easier to turn onto over, if you're going north on McLean, you know, you turning left onto Overton Park Avenue, a lot of people turn left there, and this street's narrow, cars back up behind you. Now it's just easier, makes the traffic flow so much better right. because people aren't driving south as quickly because they're going over those speed bumps, which people think are annoying, but really, it just, that little area works so well compared to how it was. So,
yeah. Yeah, well, thanks. Thanks for sharing that. And yes, that's another example of, you know, somebody reaching out to me with a problem and saying, hey, can we do something to fix this? What can you do? And yes, I, you know, got the speed bumps put down, better crosswalk signage installed. And that's, you know, to your question about what I'm proud of, I think, you know, particular projects aside, in general, I would say just the work that I've done in partnering with people in neighborhoods, I feel like that's really been a hallmark of my time with the city is that I always wanted to collaborate with people in neighborhoods and just the community at large. I think that's how we need to get things done, particularly in a city that is so strapped for cash and resources that you, if we are going to improve our neighborhoods and lift the city up as a whole, then it has to be done together. So I look at, you know, a lot of the projects that I was able to do, it was only because I had partners in a neighborhood that wanted to be involved. You know, I look at South Memphis. I was able to, you know, do some nice projects down there, like on Mississippi Boulevard and Walker Avenue. In collaboration with The Works Incorporated, Roshan Austin, Eric Niemeyer, Lindsay Pinder. I believe Lindsay's moved on somewhere else now, but you know, working with these individuals to bring improvements to those streets, working with the Memphis Medical District Collaborative on a lot of the improvements you've seen, you know, on Manassas and the Edge, MLK. You know, Sydney Sepulveda, Susanna Barton, when she was still with the MMDC. Just, you know, countless right. other neighborhood associations or individuals. And that's really what I think I'm most proud of is that partnership, that collaboration, not just because it resulted in some change, but I'd like to believe, I'd like to hope that because of that collaboration, there are now more individuals, more organizations in the city that know what's possible, that know, you know, if I just ask, maybe that can start the process and I can get something done. And now they know how to do that.
Okay, that makes sense. So if you're just joining us, you're listening to Memphis Metropolis and WYXR 91.7 FM. And we're talking to Nick Euler, who's the, until recently, was the Bikeway and Pedestrian Program Manager for the City of Memphis. So Nick, those are great examples. So let's look at the other side of the coin for a minute and talk about some of the things that you think are where you're frustrated perhaps by the lack of progress and you feel are urgent issues for the community to encounter, you know, to take on in the active transportation arena. And, you know, the last time you were on, we talked about, you know, traffic violence and pedestrian deaths. And that's probably on your list, not to put words in your mouth, but talk a little bit about the things that, that you think are urgent for Memphis to address in that realm going forward.
Yeah. Well, you're not putting the words in my mouth. Those are the words that would have come out of it. Certainly safety is first and foremost. As I discussed on the previous, an earlier episode, like you said, that you know, a listener can go back to and hear the whole conversation, and they should. Memphis, unfortunately, is one of the most dangerous cities in the country for not just walking, but really using our streets in general for drivers, for walkers, for people on bikes. You know, last year, 2022, we had over 80 people killed while walking in the city, over 200 people killed while using our streets in any way, whether that was in a car, on a bike, you know, on foot. And when you look at that, you look at these numbers compared to other cities in the country, statistically, we are one of the most dangerous. And I think what frustrates me is that there's still this persistent notion that I encounter from people that, you know, oh, well, that's just the way it is. Like, you know, there's nothing we can really do about it. Like, these things happen, right? Like, it's unfortunate, but what are we supposed to do? Or maybe the response is, oh, we just need to write more tickets, right? Like if the police did, you know, better enforcement, then these
if the police did their job, right?
Sure. They're, you know, enforcement is part of the solution, but it's not.
Well, it's being facetious. You know, that's what people say. The police just need to do their job, right?
Right. Yeah. The design of our streets, the way that we built them to prioritize moving as many cars as quickly as possible. That was, you know, the way we did things for decades. And the result is that now we have streets that are just dangerous. and so we can fix this. We can reduce these crashes just through better infrastructure. So getting that message across and getting people to understand that and the challenges that I think I've faced and getting it out there has certainly frustrated me at times. But that said, I do think it's improving. I think especially just in the last year or two, because of the shocking increase in the number of deaths, traffic crash deaths, whether that's a person walking or just a person in the car, there's been increased attention on the issue, I feel like. And it shouldn't have come to that. You know, it's tragic that it takes, you know, many more people dying for others to start to notice. But I am optimistic that with that increased attention, that there'll be more action.
Well, what is, just to get in the weeds for a second, Nick, what is that, from a practical perspective, what does that look like? Is it looking at where incidents happen? You know, there's a lot of incidents on Winchester. I'm making that up as an example. Let's look at Winchester and figure out what needs to happen there and then allocate some resources to it. Or is it that kind of thing, which is really kind of the long game? Or are there other things specific? How does that play out and from a practical perspective?
Yeah, practically, it's as simple as, and I say that with air quotes, of getting money, getting funding to implement these kinds of improvements to the infrastructure, building safer streets. So, like for example, we already have a plan. We have a the City of Memphis Pedestrian Safety Action Plan that was completed in 2015. So at this point, if anything, it's a little outdated. Which, you know, that plan never received funding to actually build the recommendation. So this plan looked at all the data, looked at the crashes going on, and it developed a list of literally hundreds of projects recommended around the city, you know, specific intersections. Here's what needs to be done at this intersection. At segments of roadway, here's what needs to be done on this segment of roadway. And despite some attempts that I made, I was never able to get dedicated funding for the plan. Any amount would have been great. I would have taken 10 million, 5 million, a million, whatever. But to this day, the plan has no dedicated funding for it. And despite what I think is, you know, maybe a popular notion, there is no dedicated funding for pedestrian safety infrastructure or even bike infrastructure in the city. You look in the city budget, there is no line item for bike lanes. There's no line item for pedestrian crossings or improved, you know, pedestrian crossings, something like that. Most of the times that I put down bike lanes, it was piggybacking on another project, like a resurfacing. Or if it was like a, you know, pedestrian safety project, chances are I got a federal grant or a state grant to do it. So to answer your question, what that looks like practically is really just establishing dedicated funding to go out and build the things that we know are needed. Just right now, we don't have.
So a lot of the analysis has already been done. It's just a matter of starting to work on it.
Yeah. Yes.
Do most cities have dedicated budget line items for bike and pedestrian infrastructure?
I feel that most of our peer cities, mid to large sizes in the country, do have some level of funding dedicated for that. We don't have to look far. For example, let's just go up I-40 to Nashville. They have, a couple years ago, their city council approved an annual budget of $20 million for sidewalks and pedestrian safety projects. That's, again, it bears repeating, $20 million every year for pedestrian safety and sidewalk projects. Memphis, we don't have that. We have zero.
I remember this.
I can maybe have a little slight caveat there, a little asterisk. There is, it's $500,000 that's dedicated every year, but it can only be used for sidewalks on city-owned property, which, you know, limits its application considerably. So again, that's $20 million for pedestrian projects in Nashville. And I don't remember the exact amount. Maybe it's $10 million that they have for bicycle projects annually.
It seems to me that there's an opportunity for more advocacy on that, because in your role as in the engineering department, I'm guessing there's only so far you can push.
Yeah.
Especially since engineering is trying to get money for a lot of different things, including pet projects of people and but an advocacy organization could make some noise about that.
I agree 100%. And that's a thought that has crossed my mind so many times while I was in the job. Just what a difference it would make if we had a robust, sophisticated advocacy organization specifically for this issue, active transportation in the city. If you look at any city across the country that has a reputation of being a great place to walk, to bike, I'd be willing to bet you that they have an advocacy organization. Portland, even just Nashville, again, use Nashville as another example. New York, Washington, D.C., Seattle, San Francisco. And I think it's because just for the reasons that you were getting at, I, as a public employee, it's kind of limited how far I can really try and push something and not anger the wrong person, I guess. And so you need that in the community. You need people in the community who can say things on that I can't say, right? Or who can go in front of the TV cameras, local media, and say things that, you know, I couldn't do. That's lacking here in Memphis. We don't have that. I know we used to have, again, when Kyle was here, there was an attempt for something like that. And unfortunately, it kind of went away.
Well, I can tell you, I mean, that's how we got a bike and pedestrian coordinator to start with. And that's why the HAMP line got going. And that's why we went from 1 mile of bike lanes to like 100 in over a couple of years. It was advocacy that and leadership from the mayor at the time, Mayor Wharton, was amenable to that and responsive. And so I don't want to negate that, but it was advocates that pushed him and pushed the engineering department. So it's, I agree 100%. So,
I think, like, because your very first question was, you know, what's changed in the last 10 years or so? And this is certainly one of the things that I think that, you know, we should mention is that you're right. There used to be a much stronger advocacy scene. There were a number of individuals who were in the city at the time Kyle was, and who were advocates. And let's not forget, Kyle was an advocate first, and then eventually he got the job to work
exactly
for the city. And I think in some ways we were a victim of our own success. Like we had strong advocacy. They actually started winning these battles. They got changed. They got Kyle's position created. The position I had that Kyle had before we got it created, started getting bike lanes put on the ground and these other initiatives happening. And I kind of think that at some point maybe people, they just started thinking like, oh, well, we did it. We won. Like, we don't have to fight anymore. We don't have to push anymore. And a lot of the people who were part of that movement to start with, you know, they moved on in life. They left Memphis or they moved on to a new challenge or something like that. And now, again, like, we just don't have that. I'm not saying we don't have advocates in Memphis. We don't have people who don't care about these things. We certainly do, because I've heard from them, and I'm glad that they're here. But there's no like organized efforts, and I think that's what's.
I agree 100%. Okay, so I guess last question, Nick. This is kind of an existential one. But one of the things, I think we've talked about it, and certainly in the planning community, we talk about how the land mass in Memphis has grown so much more than the population. And over the last 50 years, and just has created so many transportation challenges. I mean, has created a lot of challenges, you know, budgetary challenges, but in terms of transportation, are you at all, optimistic that we'll be able to get sort of our hands around that and get more after transportation, better transit? I mean, it's just... there's more reasons than that the city is a mess, but I think the lack of density is a huge barrier.
Yeah, that's a great question. You're right that the lack of density is a barrier. And I think we need to be realistic that barring some unforeseeable, you know, skyrocketing in population, you know, something happens where, you know, we see growth happening that even surpasses, you know, what Nashville's had the last decade or something like that. This challenge is going to remain. I think there are going to be neighborhoods and parts of the city that I think will be an unpopular position to take. But I think there are neighborhoods and parts of the city that they're not coming back. I think just being realistic because they're not coming back. The city is going to be continually challenged to maintain services and infrastructure in those areas, again, because of the low density. So I think that we need to make tough decisions about what parts of the city really make the most sense for us investing in for the future. And that's obviously a difficult thing to do politically, because you don't want to cut out neighborhoods and you don't want to treat, you know, neighborhoods unfairly, I guess. But if we're looking for the long term, you know, fiscal health of the city, you know, maybe this one capital improvement project in this neighborhood really doesn't make sense. But I guess getting back to kind of, you know, really your question about active transportation in particular, again, thinking about density and these challenges, I have thought that, you know, maybe we need to acknowledge that not all of Memphis, not all 300 square miles of Memphis are going to be walkable or even bikeable. And instead, we set a goal that, you know, at a bare minimum, we want to have a certain level of safety everywhere. Like if somebody's going to walk in Hickory Hill, Southeast Memphis, you know, very low density area, they should still be able to do that with a minimum level of safety. But because it is so low dense, it's probably still going to be a more of a car focused area than say Midtown, Orange Mound. And so maybe we should be focusing in terms of true walkability, bikeability, and transit access, focus on these denser areas of the city for that kind of investment.
That makes a lot of sense to me. The transit piece is a little bit of a question mark because, you know, some of those areas, Southeast Memphis, you know, you've got people that are transit dependent. And of course, you would never, not serve them. But in MATA, I mean, the whole, that's an ongoing challenge, balancing those things. But that makes yeah. What you're saying certainly makes sense on paper.
Yeah, exactly. That's the, I guess I'm on my way out the door, I guess, so I can say things. But, you know, it's not, you look at Detroit, you know, Detroit's made the decision to, you know, basically, trying to think of what the word it is they use, but you know they're accepting that some areas of the city are no longer going to be urban. They're going to kind of allow them to revert yep. back to kind of rural areas. They're going down. They're going to downgrade urban services there. So you know maybe something like that in Memphis. Relocation assistance, right? Helping people who are in one of these areas relocate to an area that is denser, where they can access transit better.
I'd like to see that. And that gives you the ability, you know, places on the fringe that are potentially in poor condition, give people the opportunity to move. It's something that I, you know, think about a lot. And it's just, I feel like it holds our community back in a lot of different ways.
I agree.
I
was just going to say kind of the bigger answer to your question there about any hope for active transportation in Memphis. I never was naive and thought, oh, we're going to become Amsterdam, you know, overnight, anything like that. I think it's important for people to remember that, and again, maybe I'm repeating myself here a little bit, but, you know, Memphis and most American cities, you go back 100 years ago, they were dense, walkable places. They had streetcar lines. Here in Memphis, we had, you know, over 20 different streetcar lines that crisscrossed all neighborhoods in the city. And it was a choice that we made, or maybe you could argue it was forced upon us in some ways, to cater more to cars. And we rebuilt the city to work well for cars. And so the city we have today is the result of decades of that approach. So to fix it is also probably going to take decades. So this last decade has really been the first that we are now working in that direction. And we've made progress, like we talked about just earlier. But, you know, we're still going to be at this for a number of decades. But slowly but surely, I do think Memphis and other U.S. cities can be, again, these walkable, dense communities.
Okay. Well, that's good to end on a positive note. So what are you going to be doing in Colorado?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. So I am going to work for a company called Tool Design. This is a planning and design firm that specializes in active transportation, walking, biking, transit. It's a national firm. They have 19 offices across the country. Denver is one of their largest offices. I believe it's their second or third largest office. I will be managing the planning operations at the Denver office. So doing a lot of work in Colorado, the whole mountain region, really. But one of the things that I'm really excited about, though, among others with a new opportunity, is the way Tool works. You know, they assign projects based on talent. So I actually, you know, be able to work on projects across the country, not just in Denver, Colorado. You know, there's a good chance, I've been told, that I'll be working on projects also here in the Southeast. So I really see this as a great opportunity to take the skills and experience that I've gained here in Memphis and now bring them to other communities across the country and help them be more walkable and bikeable.
Well, that's amazing. Well, congratulations and good luck with all of that.
Thank you, Emily. Thank you. And if I can, just real quick, again, just issue my thanks to the city, to Memphis, and to all the people that I've worked with and partnered with over the years here. I can't say enough just how thrilled I was to be in this job and the opportunity I've had to work with so many amazing people and to help move this city forward, and at least a little bit, move the needle a little bit. At least that's what I believe. And Memphis is still my home. I have family here. I'll be back for visits, and I'll be keeping an eye on it from afar. And, you know, who knows? Like, I still have plenty of years ahead of me, so I may come back here.
Right. Well, I'm glad you're going to be coming back to visit, so that's good to know. So you've been listening to Memphis Metropolis and WYXR 91.7 FM. I've been talking to Nick Euler, who's making a final appearance on Memphis Metropolis since he's leaving his role or left his role at Bikeway Pedestrian Program Manager for the City of Memphis. He's been reflecting on his tenure in Memphis and moving on to new opportunities. So thank you so much for coming on the show, Nick.
Thanks again for having me, Emily.
You've been listening to Memphis Metropolis on WYXR 91.7 FM. I'm Emily Trenum. Memphis Metropolis airs every Monday at 1, so please tune in again next week. You can listen to past programs on our program page at wyxr.org or on memphismetropolis.com. You can also follow us and send feedback on social media. Now, stay tuned for Memphis Undercover with Nancy.